All right. Hey, good morning. Welcome back. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast, part of the Social Podcast Network. www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Local folks doing local podcasts. Good morning. September the 24th, 2025. Beautiful day here on the east side. Hope it's great wherever you are at. Beautiful day. Warm, sunny. It's a little hot. Ugh. I'm a little bit over it. I'm ready for some fall. We've had some beautiful days, but man, it's hot out again today. It is muggy. I had some tasks, some chores I needed to get done this morning. Got up, went to the gym. Doing that routinely now, thank God. Feel so much better. It's so crazy how much better I feel when I go and exercise in the morning. And, you know, just like really go do a half hour or something. I went and did the elliptical this morning. Nothing too risky, and did some back, some pulls, like my middle son says, we're going to do pulls today, pull. I go, okay, so I did some pull today, which turns out was my back, and came home, and then I had a few things I want to get done. I am off today, had to do some weed whacking, and now I am sort of in a holding period. My wife and I are going to go up and see my dad. Yesterday was his birthday, so we're going to take him some flowers and go see him for a little bit. So I'm sort of just hanging out, waiting for her. She had to get her nails done, I guess. Nails are very important, apparently, so she's getting those nails done, and then after that we will be riding up to go see my dad. And so that's exciting. You know, I don't have a lot of expectation of things today, just, you know, chilling and enjoying myself. And, you know, I have people struggling all around me. And I feel, there's times I feel a little bit bad because we are so blessed. And, but this isn't luck, right? This is not because I'm lucky. This is because I'm sober. And I hate to make it so simple. There's a person that is in my life right now that is not struggling, she's straight up drinking. And it's so devastating to everybody around her, and she is in complete denial. I've talked about her before. She's a good friend, man. It's really a drag. And her mom, of course, is, you know, the one that takes the brunt of all of this. And apparently they had a bad weekend, and I saw her yesterday. The girl is not around. Apparently they had a big falling out this weekend, and and then, you know, of course, she reaches out to her mom and says, will you go to counseling with me? And I'm like, why do you have to go? why do you have to go to counseling, right? It is a, that all of a sudden now that makes it like your fault. These are interesting little tricks of the trade. Now, I don't know their relationship, but I do know that the main problem and probably the only problem that they have is this person drinks too much. But it's funny how the active alcoholic will somehow, and I've been this person, will create all these other situations, right? Things of topic to blame the problems on other than the actual drinking of the alcohol. We're very cunning, us alcoholics, and this person is like, oh, she wants me to go to counseling with her. I'm like, I want to go to counseling with her. She has, the solution's very easy, stop drinking. But this person, and she says, well, can't you help her? I said, I cannot help her. I've talked about this before. I cannot help her. Every time I even slightly say anything, 100 reasons why she does what she does comes out of her mouth. And I just have zero patience for it, right? I've been doing this way too long. I've had the curtain pulled back. I know the solution, right? It's about being accountable and willing and caring. And if you have a bunch of excuses come pouring out of your mouth early on, clearly you are not being accountable and you are not willing. And at that point, I lose all interest. And of course, this person's like, you know, my life's so bad. And I'm like, man, you just don't even know. Your life can get a lot worse. And so that's sort of what I've been going through. And I haven't been going through shit. I'm 100% grateful that I am 100% sober and loving this simple little life that I live. And from everybody else's point of view, it looks like something special is happening. But the reality is, we don't get drunk. And it's pretty, You know, as soon as that alcohol goes, would go in my mouth, my life that I know today would cease to exist. And that's just reality, right? So, but, you know, and then I have another buddy that's struggling with a divorce. And, you know, he's like, I wish I had your life. And I'm like, there's nothing special about my life. I don't drink, right? I don't know what their problem is. And it's, you know, it's all around. And it's just, you know, just keeps me grateful. I thought I would maybe read, you know, one of the things that keeps coming to mind is why did I drink after 5 years, right? Why did my buddy that just called me go back out, right? Why do people go back out? I can't speak for anybody except for myself. And I thought maybe we could sit down and chat about it. And I also wanted to read this As Bill Sees It. So this is page 228, the beginning of true kinship. When we reached AA and for the first time in our lives stood among people who seemed to understand, the sense of belonging was tremendously exciting. We thought that the isolation problem had been solved. But we soon discovered that while we weren't alone anymore in our social sense, we still suffered many of the old pangs of anxious apparentness until we had talked with complete candor of our conflicts and had listened to someone else do the same thing. We still didn't belong. Step 5 was the answer. It was the beginning of true kinship with man and with God, right? Get out and push. Van Halen, Sinner's Swing. Sinner's Swing. Great song, I remember. Oh, my, back in the day, being a teenager, loving me some Van Halen. It's a great album. But yeah, what is it that led me to failure on my first time around? And I would first of all like to say that I don't think there is failure. I believe that I had to, you know, go through everything that I've gone through to get to where I'm at today, and there's no guarantees that I am finished, right? I hear it all the time. People, after many, many years, go back out, and so there's always that chance, but I really do feel like I feel pretty good. I feel like I have gone to the fourth dimension, right? I feel like I hover above myself in this recovery and I can sort of see all of it. And I don't know if that's good or bad. But, you know, I think about the first time when I came into the program And many times I've shared it. It went from, you know, it went from black to white, you know, overnight. This wasn't a process. This wasn't a month long goal, was to get sober. This wasn't something. This wasn't an intervention. This was one night I'm a drunk. The next night I am not. And it was a lot, right? It was a lot because for so long I thought if I could just stop drinking, right? And I really, honestly, if I'm going to be honest, I never even really thought that, right? I've shared before, I never even wanted to get sober. I used the analogy the other day. It's like walking barefoot. And there's my friend Libby who's passed. She walked around barefoot for a couple years. And I used to say, what the fuck is up with this lady? Why? No, she has no shoes on in the winter. And there's another guy that's doing the same thing right now. He's not wearing any shoes. And whatever, to each his own. But, you know, if I walked around without shoes today, right, my feet would freaking hurt, right? I would be like, right? But maybe over a few days, maybe it would start to get better. Maybe the bottom of my feet would become calloused, more calloused than my old feet already are. And maybe walking on things would become less painful. And I would start to not notice it as much. And I think that's sort of what happened with me and my drinking, right? It's like walking without shoes for freaking 12 years. All of the, you know, the God voice that was maybe inside of my head that would say, you shouldn't do this. I think really the battle was between good and evil. I mean, my early days, you know, my early days didn't even involve drinking, but there was a lot of ditching school, right? And I've said this, you know, hundreds of times, believe it or not, but it's all, you know, Tom here has a decision-making problem. And my early issues of the struggle, and it was really, you know, going against my folks, right? Because there was life under my parents' house, and then there was me leaving for high school and stuff and starting to get involved in different things that the world under my parents' roof didn't always jive with, right? And the first one was school. I hated school, right? And so I would ditch. And this is back in 1983 and 84, and you could leave the campus to go out for lunch, and we'd go out for lunch, and I just wouldn't come back, right? And there was a decision to do that, right? And there was, you know, there was thought, and what would be the consequences, and I hope I don't get caught, and boy, if my parents find out, oh, shit, right? But I, you know, wanted to hang out with my girlfriend, or I wanted to go try to smoke some pot, or I wanted to just have a good time, and I hated school. And so really, it was about good and evil, right? There was what I should be doing, and then there was what self wanted to do. And I would think of the consequences and then brush them aside. And on I would go, I would deal with the consequences later, right? It was the beginning of this journey, right? And it would slowly go into, you know, drinking and driving and, you know, all of the goddamn things that I used to do as a teenager and a young adult. I was, you know, I didn't care. My feet had become calloused. I could walk across anything without even flinching. And, you know, that's not great. So, like I said, I never wanted to get sober. I had become so numb and so beat down, right? Any hope, any dreams that I had had become, you know, something in the rearview mirror. And I had just become settled with what I was, which was a guy that worked on a golf course to drink every day. And I would have flashes of fun, right? I would have flashes of moments, and it talks about that. I would be isolated, and it would be me, myself, and I. And, you know, I can remember playing music loud, acting like I was playing guitar, you know, trying. It was always about the past, right? It was always about the past or the future, but I cannot talk about the present. And it was just a miserable existence. But at the time, I just was, like, okay with it. And so from the moment that I went from black to white, it was a real game changer. And, you know, I've talked about it. Thank God for meetings, right? Thank God for sponsorship. Thank God for, you know, the big book. Thank God for all of these things that slowly but surely led me back to having feeling in my feet, right? Finally putting my shoes on and giving a shit again. And, but, you know, I think I also felt like my only biggest problem, really, was every time I got drunk, I did not know what I was going to do, right? I could smoke crack. I could drink and drive. I could do drugs. I could do, you know, I remember in that period when my wife left me, And before I went to York, Pennsylvania, it was probably, I don't even know the timeline, but there was some weeks in there. And I remember people being over at our house that smoked crack. At some point, I had gotten so drunk that I decided I wanted to smoke some crack. And the next morning, you're like, oh, my God, what did I do? Right? Oh, my God. And so my whole problem was the drinking. And so I figured if I just fixed the drinking, which means I stopped the drinking, and I could only come to this conclusion now that I had become sober, right? This wasn't a solution. I maybe, you know, I do think, you know, it wasn't that I hated drinking. It was just some of the things that I did while I was drunk. Right? If I could just fix those, like if I could just sit on the couch and watch SportsCenter and drink vodka and grapefruit, I would probably still be doing it. But that just doesn't how it works. And the torment. And so, you know, I've just early recovery, I thought, well, as long as I'm not drinking, I have fixed the problem. I'm not smoking any crack. I'm not doing any freaking drugs. I'm not hanging out with crazy people. I'm not drinking and driving. So good. I fixed it. Well, we know better than that, right? We know that it takes more than that. And I hung in there, right? I hung in there for a few years. I remember doing the steps, but just not quite understanding, not really seeking out what I could learn from the steps. It was more about checking off a box and, you know, saying all the right things, hanging out with the right people, doing the right thing, you know, going, taking meetings into jails and recovery houses, making meetings, hanging out with groups, being part of a men's group, an IOP, making tons of friends, walking the streets of where I live, shaking hands with sober people. I mean, I was doing everything that I thought I was supposed to do. Except for the problem really is, you know, and I want to say, I'd like to say it was several things, but I think it really came down to the fifth step, right? Doing a fourth and a fifth step. And I just didn't do it. I just didn't do it from the right place. And it didn't take much, man. And next thing you know, I'm back out there. And so coming back in, and it really did change the seriousness that I treated this program, the seriousness that I treated these steps, right? Trying not to be a person that has to do this shit and somebody that gets to and really starting to learn. Plus, I think it's my age. You know, I don't know. Caring all of a sudden. I started to care again. Children, my son. It was several things, but I just started to look at this as a from a different point of view. And but, you know, I like how it talks about it in that reading, you know, and I shared it in the podcast I did the other day. You know, sometimes recovery is very alone, right? It's very lonely. Not many people that I know. In fact, I don't know anybody. I know the guys, you know, obviously that I work with and that I see at meetings. But besides that, I don't know anybody in recovery. But I know a lot of people that struggle with their life, and I think that recovery would probably help. But you also, I also know that it takes a hell of a lot of work. And I don't know if everybody's willing to do that. In fact, I don't think they are. And honestly, for today, I'm lucky that I am. But it can be a very lonely existence. And, you know, my second marriage ended because of my recovery. I mean, it ended for several reasons, but it's hard to connect. It's really hard to connect with somebody that isn't having a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, a relationship with God. And that's unfortunately what it turns out to be. And it's not unfortunate for me, but if you don't feel like having a relationship with God, it is unfortunate. And I don't know if I honestly felt like having a relationship with God, a God of my understanding. Right, I tried to have a relationship of God, of your understanding, of, you know, Billy's understanding, of Jim's understanding, but it was hard to have a relationship with God of my understanding because I didn't understand. As a self-centered person, I have a self-centered way of thinking, and everything is about self. So when I think of God, it's like, what is God going to do for me? And this, you know, all of the stuff that's been going on and the God talk and the spiritual battle, I believe we are in the midst of a holy war, a spiritual battle. And as wonky and weird as that sounds, it is true. I'm sorry. This is about good and evil. And I know a lot about it because I've been in it. I live amongst it. They're all freaking spirits. Some have bodies, some do not. But this is a spiritual battle, a holy war, and it's epic. It's epic. But to the, you know, thinking about it, you know, and you, when we do that fourth step and we do that moral inventory and we take a hard look, a real honest effort to try to figure it out, what is it about us? And then we do that fifth step. This is building the relationship with God. I went to the meeting the other night. It was on the third step. This is the introduction to having a relationship with God, the third step. You know, I've spent the opposite of the third step building a relationship with the devil for the last big chunk of my life. And now I'm switching teams. But if we want to know there's God, we now have to know there's a devil. If we want to know that there's evil, we have to know that there's good, or vice versa. And it's so real. You know? And I have names for them, right? Arrogance. Arrogance is summoned by inconvenience. I'd like to give them cooler names. That'd be really cool. But anytime inconvenience shows up, right? Arrogance. See it all the time. Just having a conversation about God can create inconvenience. And when inconvenience shows up, his little buddy arrogance shows up, and we act by a different set of rules. You know, you look at people, and who knows, you know, this guy that shot Charlie Kirk, now it's, you know, we're all having a JFK all over again. The grassy knoll, we've got all this thing. But I can tell you, the inconvenience was when a person speaks like he did about God. People find that very inconvenient, especially if they are swinging on the other side, you know, the dark side. Then arrogance shows up and we behave in a separate way by shooting people. It's all spiritual. This isn't somebody's good idea. This is a spiritual battle. And we're in the midst of it. It's crazy. But that's the complicated side. But as far as I'm concerned for my life, I think it was a big problem. And today I'm open to having a relationship with God. And that means, like any relationship, I have to be willing to communicate and listen and be honest. And that's tough. It's tough. But today, you know, I try to, you know, I it's all a third step. Everything I try to do today is hopefully in the glory of God. And if it isn't, I'm going to hear about it. And I feel like I'm really at a point in my life where it's so condensed and focused. You know, there's things that I feel like doing that I just don't do today because I know that that's not God, what God would want me to do. You know, there's things I want to say. You know, I don't know if I shared this the other day, but I took off my RFK sticker. I did share this. I took off my RFK sticker because of this weird people. You know, part of me wants to get another RFK Jr. sticker, but I'm not going to. I have to know that, you know, this is just going to have to be okay. It's fine. But a lot of third step, a lot of fourth step, a lot of fifth step talk. You know, I've been working with those guys. We had a great chat the other day. Went to a meeting the other day on the third step. You know, everything I do today, came up to do this podcast. Believe me, there was a voice. Don't. I made a choice. I did a third step on this, you know. I turned my will, my thinking, and my life over the care of a God of my understanding. What is that understanding? Do the right thing. Or if not, you're going to hear about it. And if you keep ignoring me, you're going to lose everything. You've done it before. Don't become numb. Don't become so callous that you can't hear or feel when God talks to you or me. When I say you, I'm speaking to me, not lecturing you. But be aware when God talks to me and do not ignore and care. If I don't care, God will stop talking to me. I remember I used to hear something like, it's better to have not known me than to have known me and to have walked away. I have never known God. This is the first time I have a relationship with the God of my understanding. And it doesn't look like anybody else's relationship. It doesn't look like anybody else's understanding, so I question it. You know, all of a sudden now everybody's becoming a Christian and the teachings of Jesus. And I'm like, well, I haven't been reading that. Do I still love God? Am I still having a relationship with God? Am I not doing enough? Maybe. I don't know. But I'm doing better. I definitely am doing better. I didn't flip off anybody today. I didn't swerve at anybody. I didn't tell anybody to go to hell. You know, I provide a service to clients. I've talked about it. I haven't spoken one thing about one thing that's been political lately. I've kept my mouth shut. I haven't mentioned Charlie Kirk's assassination to one person. Because it just doesn't. I mean, or does it, right? Or does it? Do I say something? Do I, you know, I had a client of mine called me the other day. She goes, I'm radicalized. And I go, oh, shit, what happened? She goes, I've had enough. She goes, what they did to Charlie Kirk, and I'm tired of being embarrassed about my country and my position and how I feel and how I stand and up for all this stuff. And I'm like, I hear you. I get you. But, you know, I still have to have a job. Right? And I still have to remember, right? I remember one of the cool things RFK said when he was running for president. He says, you have to put your feet in the shoes of your opponent or a person that you are critical of. And I have been in the shoes of the others, and I do get it. You know, we have our side and beliefs, and they believe absolutely something else, and they're pretty passionate about it. And I gotta respect that. You know? I think I shared about my neighbor who was laying it, giving me the shit. And I said, dude, you know, we love you as a neighbor. You know, my daughter takes care of your cats. I plow your freaking driveway. I look at your house every day and make sure everything is in order because that's what good friends and good neighbors do. Right? It doesn't have to be, you know, a chore. It's what I naturally do. And I enjoy that. I enjoy that freedom. And I said, we need to stick together. And he wrote back, yeah, we need to stick together. And he was like, you know, you're right. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing that him and I arguing about or pointing out. It's going to change anything wherever, you know, the big people make the big decisions are. They don't call every morning and say, what's your thoughts on this? You know, I dare to say they want us, but, you know, there does seem to be some sort of group that would prefer us as humans fighting amongst ourselves instead of coming together in unity. A country divided can never stand, right? It's nothing new. It's nothing new. So to sum it all up, I take this very serious today, and I have a relationship with God, and I listen to God, and I care. And it's of my understanding. I've never heard anybody describe the relationship that I have with God today. Because in the end, right, whether it's religion or it is recovery, all these programs and, you know, whatever it is, want us to be as very good people. And I'm going to put very, 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 very good people in there, publicly and privately. Around people and by ourselves. It's very easy to be a good person for the hour at the meeting. It's the other 23 hours of the day, you know, that God's watching over us. We just have to care. All right, I'm going to read the Daily Reflections, and then we're going to go see my dad. And grateful for that. Love him. All right, Daily Reflections. Oh. I wonder what it'll say. Here we go. Ooh, vigilance. Okay, September the 24th. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. Commencing to drink after a period of sobriety, we are in a short time as bad as ever. That is true. That is very true. If we are planning to stop drinking, there must be no reservations of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday we will be immune to alcohol. That's right. Alcoholics Anonymous, page 33. Today, I am an alcoholic. Tomorrow will be no different. My alcoholism lives within me now and forever. I must never forget what I am. Alcohol will surely kill me if I fail to recognize and acknowledge my disease only a daily basis. I am not playing a game in which a loss is temporary setback. I am dealing with my disease, for which there is no cure, only daily acceptance and vigilance. That's right. I was talking to that lady yesterday, and she said, why do they call it a disease? And I said, I don't really know. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, it is, I guess, easier to think about it. I call it a spiritual malady. And, yeah. But, hey, to each his own. I hope everyone has a great day. Thanks for letting me share, and I'll catch you later. Bye.